Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of The Morning Show with hosts Phil Huff and Julie Calamine. Good morning, Julie.
Good morning, Phil. How are you?
I'm good. How have you been?
Very well.
Snow, have you excited at all for winter sports?
Well, the snow in my neighborhood was just the lightest little dusting, so I'm not feeling terribly excited about snow yet, but I am waiting. I'm waiting for snow. How about you?
We had a good solid 5 inches out of the house, and so enough to have to scrape the car and think more solidly about winter. We're all prepared.
Microclimates around Sandpoint. Some folks get snow and then others get nothing.
Yeah, so we're going to talk today with Sheriff Wheeler a little bit about preparedness, Community Watch, and the Sheriff's Department. And before that, let's delve into the weather just a little bit more and see what's coming up this week. Today we have a high of 33. We're just going to break out of freezing. Partial and patchy fog today. Patchy fog and freezing fog tonight. These do not sound like particularly good conditions. They sound like things that keep emergency response teams busy.
Potential emergency conditions.
Low of 22 degrees Fahrenheit, and the rest of this week, it just gets a little bit cooler with daytime highs hovering right around freezing and lows dipping into the teens.
That's chillier.
Yeah, so it's time to make sure you got everything working at home with your wood stove and your heater. And we've had conversations before on the show about making sure your fire's safe. Go back and listen to those podcasts if you need to.
That's right. And Phil, before we introduce our guest, who is Sheriff Daryl Wheeler, our Bonner County Sheriff, I just want to remind everyone that we had a great annual meeting last Wednesday. It happened at the IPA. We raised funds for the station. Additionally, we kicked off an end-of-year giving appeal. So rather than forget or mention at the end of the hour, let's just hope that our listeners are keeping in mind that this would be a great time of year to consider either joining, renewing membership if they haven't, or making an additional contribution.
That's a very good reminder. And on to today's show, we have two topics. Our first one, and I'll let Julie introduce our guest, is once again Sheriff Daryl Wheeler, and she'll talk about the topic. And then the second half, we're going to have Rich DelCarlo come in and talk about the Christmas bird count.
That's right. Well, fortunately, I have not had the opportunity to meet our county sheriff yet. I think that's a good thing. Good morning, Sheriff Wheeler.
Good morning, Julie and Phil.
How are you?
I am doing great this morning.
Oh, good. Well, for those of us who haven't met you, as I've not, or don't know about you very well, why don't you tell us just a little bit about yourself, your history, how you came to be here in the Sandpoint, the Bonner County area?
Sure, I'd be glad to. So I think most important, I'll just say that I'm a Christian. I've been married for 38 years. I have 4 children and 6 grandchildren, right? And so that is my legacy. I'm very proud about it. I moved here in 1998 from a place south of Boise. So most of us know that we're Californians and we kind of get away from that. But I was very fortunate and afforded a great experience and training in law enforcement in California. So I started out my career working for the California State Legislature as an assembly of arms, and working dignitary protection and working in the state capitol. And then I spent almost 10 years at the Contra Costa County Sheriff's Office. And I moved my family here to wonderful Bonner County 20 years ago to have a better quality of life, and it's the best decision I've made. Started at the Sheriff's Office. After working about 2.5 years there, went to Sandpoint Police Department. Worked there for about 7.5 years, and when the opportunity in 2008 came about during the sheriff's election, I put my name in the hat and was elected, and I've gone through 3 different campaigns, so that's kind of my short story.
Yeah.
So, well, like so many of us, you weren't born in the area, but you've come here and really enjoyed living here and worked on making contribution to the community. Thank you. So I'm interested in knowing just a little bit about sheriff's duties. You know, you're the head sheriff. Are you the only person who's technically called sheriff? Is everyone else?
Yes, Julie, there are 44 counties and there are 44 elected sheriffs in each county. And we are the chief law enforcement officer in the county. So constitutionally, the buck stops here. We don't follow anybody's directions except the Constitution and the state laws. And so It's a great responsibility to have that authority and that responsibility. So even the president of the United States cannot tell me what to do, or the governor cannot tell me what to do.
So the job of sheriff is a very independent job.
It's independent, and it's also very important.
So tell us a little bit about the size and scope of the department, the other folks who work for you in the various areas they work in.
Sure. It's interesting. People are very surprised because I have opportunity to go around and make presentations about what's going on in the county. We actually have an $11 million budget. We have 140 total employees. We have 90 sworn deputies. We have about 35 in detention and 29 in patrol. We have 7 full-time detectives and a crime analysis. We have an evidence technician in our Marine Division, which is the largest. We have more navigal water in Bonner County than any other county in the state. So we have a Marine Division that it's between 15 and 17 Marine deputies.
Phil and I talked with those guys last summer, and what an interesting division they are.
It's something people often overlook or don't think about until they're on the water and they need someone.
They do, and they do a great job, just like all of my employees do a great job.
Yes.
So I continue. We have dispatchers, so we have 20 positions in dispatch. We have 2 full-time mechanics. We have a foreign command staff. We have a civil department. We have a full-time training coordinator. We have 2 driver's license offices, one here in Sandpoint and one in Priest River, which has 3 employees. And we have a reserve deputy. We're very unusual that has a helicopter that volunteers his time to our county in search and rescue and in patrol. And what I'm very proud about is the volunteers. We have over 100 volunteers in search and rescue, and we have close to 50 volunteers that work in the jail, that work on neighborhood watch, that do special projects within our office. We are very blessed. We have just a great, great team, and they do a fantastic job protecting this county.
And it's your job to administrate all these various departments in
the
sheriff's department.
I have a great undersheriff and great command staff, but the buck stops here, and the final decisions on hiring and where people go and what are our priorities in the county, rest on my shoulders.
Well, what does a day look like as the sheriff of Bonner County? That's got to be a pretty busy day.
Well, it is. Normally, it starts out by addressing any actions that happened that night. The sheriff is unfortunately has to deal with the political part of the job, and so I deal with all the police departments. I mean, it's a fun part of the job, and I deal with all the police chiefs, county commissioners, city councils, and my main priority is to keep the county safe. And all my decisions are based on safety of the county and making sure that we have we provide that kind of service that that we're afforded by the budget that we have.
Sure. Well, as you know, or you may not know, but those that are listening know, Phil and I on Tuesdays try to talk about ways that citizens, nonprofits are getting involved in the outdoors with the environment and volunteering, that sort of thing. And the volunteer component sounds like an interesting part of the sheriff's department. And could we talk a little bit more about that? What are volunteers doing for the sheriff?
Sure. So we have volunteers. When you look at the scope of the office, we have a vibrant chaplains program within the jail. So we have chaplains that come in and do Bible studies and just visit, teach the inmates GED and get their GED. We have Alcoholics Anonymous, Drug Anonymous. We have volunteers that come in and do special projects if we have filing, doing those kind of things. And then we have a whole group of volunteers that are just dedicated to the Neighborhood Watch Program, setting up meetings throughout the county and coordinating the training and the information and just making sure that the program continues to be a success and vibrant.
Let's go to Neighborhood Watch, because that's one of our topics we wanted to be sure to cover this morning. And that definitely is a volunteer program. That's a program that happens all over the country, yes?
It does, yes. And ours is a little different. We've created our own logo and we've created our own brand. And so what we have done is we've really developed this over the last 2 years where it's been very, very successful. Because since we've started it, we have close to 1,000 citizens that are involved that have signed up with the Neighborhood Watch Program. We have 46 different groups around the county. So we have every different part of the county that groups have volunteered to be a captain to set up a Neighborhood Watch Program. And we have 67 captains and co-captains. So these are the leaders. These are the hub within those groups. And so they are a conduit to the sheriff's office, to dispatch, and to the groups that they set up in the particular neighborhoods.
How does it make a difference for you and the sheriff's department to have these guys out helping?
It makes a huge difference, because what we're trying to attain and our goal is that we have the citizens engaged with our community, that be looking out for their neighbors, looking out for their families and their children, and they need. And also, we encourage them to make those reports to dispatch, and then when those reports are made, share it within their neighbors, so that if they see something suspicious, a car out of place, someone knocking on doors, someone doing that, they notify dispatch immediately, and then they, at the same time, when they're done with that, they notify their captain, and that information is spread out in the neighborhood so that they can be on the lookout and also report that suspicious.
For clarity for folks who may not be familiar with the program, then their primary or exclusive function really is to report, not to intervene.
Absolutely, yes. And we do not encourage our participants to intervene in crime. I mean, especially, I mean, if it's affecting them, sure. But we really want good reporters, get good information, take pictures if you can of suspects or suspicious people, provide driver's license and vehicle license, not driver's license, but vehicle license numbers, and just share that information.
So how does somebody sign up for a neighborhood watch if there's not one in their community, or even if there is one?
So the best way to do is to call the sheriff's office and talk to my executive assistant, Cheryl Kins. She will set up a meeting, and what we do is we encourage the person who wants to start that neighborhood watch to contact several of their neighbors, as many as possible. And then what we do is we have our volunteers come and make a presentation and explain the program, set up everything they need to have a neighborhood watch. What we'll do is do a background check and find out who the captain is, because the last thing we want to do is have somebody who's a criminal that would like to use, you know, the neighborhood watch program as a, you know, as an advantage to commit crimes. And then we will provide material, then we will provide stickers and signs, and that's really a deterrent, is to have signs in your neighborhood that we have a neighborhood watch program and we're looking out for suspicious activities and we're reporting.
You know, it seems to me that we have a bigger challenge for Neighborhood Watch here in the county, because I moved from a suburb in Minnesota, and you could see everyone's house and everyone's driveway, and we had a Neighborhood Watch group there, and they did an annual meeting, like a potluck, that sort of thing, and met the sheriff. But here, so many long driveways with no trespassing signs, and you don't see the houses. It does seem like it's a bigger challenge.
It is a bigger challenge, and I can see that there are a lot of resources that people can and organizations that people can get engaged. I just did a presentation out at the Grange in Vay, and look at some of the Granges, look at some of the 4-H clubs, look at some of those, because as the community gets involved with each other, they meet each other. And, you know, Julie, you're absolutely right. We are so spread out, and it's important that even if you own property and you're in a spread out neighbor, that you at least communicate with each other and know who they are that live next door to you and what kind of cars they drive. And it's important when you see something suspicious that you report it. And we at the sheriff's office, deputies would rather investigate something that turns out to be nothing than not investigate it and find out that this is the perpetrator or the suspect we're looking for in burglaries or other crimes, and leads to apprehension and conviction of those crimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hard to know what's out of place unless you know your neighbor. It's a good impetus to develop a little better understanding and relationship with your neighbors, which helps in a lot of ways.
It does. I agree. Yeah. Well, talking about not wasting the department's time, if you're worried about something, how is the sheriff's department doing with resources? Are they getting out and, you know, getting to people when they're calling? Are they doing well in that area?
We're doing well, but I think we can do better. You know, we could definitely use more deputies. You know, we are normally staffing 4 and maybe 5 on a team, and it's a 12-hour shift. So as you can see, we're almost 2,000 square miles, and so we have those 4 or 5 deputies covering the whole county. And so if we have a critical incident or if we have a domestic or something going on, it's going to take those 2 deputies to have to handle that crisis. So some of the least priority crimes, vandalisms, thefts, some of those things, we have a waiting period before we can get there because we have to handle the priority calls. I can tell you that the commissioners have done a great job in the supporting our budget. We are managing, I think, very well with the resources we have, but we could always do more and always need more deputies.
Mm-hmm. So we've talked about the volunteers with the Neighborhood Watch and a little bit with the detention centers. Search and Rescue is the other big volunteer program you have. Tell
sure.
us about that.
So it's we just took over the Search and Rescue group. Priest Lake Search and Rescue was a primary agency up in Priest Lake that ran our search and rescue. So they worked for the sheriff's office. They worked for me. So when we needed a call out, I would call them and they would muster up resources. Now all of those volunteers have come on to the sheriff's office. And so now that is managed by Deputy Jason Davis. And he manages the training and makes sure that all of the lists are current and those assets are available when we have a need for a search or any other investigative process that we need volunteers to handle those responsibilities.
So I would think that might speed response time if you're a bit more centralized. It is
because we actually have units that are coordinated in Priest Lake and Priest River area, and we also have a Sandpoint unit. So getting those people out is normally less than an hour to get people to a scene to perform their duties.
Forgive me if you've already mentioned this, but are the search and rescue folks volunteers? Or
they are volunteers, yes.
Wow, entirely.
Entirely, yes.
Wow.
We provide the funding through grants and through the sheriff's office and through the county commissioners, our budget, for all of the training. But all of their equipment, they purchase their own, all the vehicles, all the safety equipment is purchased by that volunteer, which is a great asset to the county.
It's pretty amazing, Phil.
It is. It's, you know, like the Neighborhood Watch program. It's done at a lot of places, but with certain twists in each one.
That's right. That's right. A question that I have about just the sheriff's department and law enforcement in general is, how do you all do a good job of working together? I was thinking of all the divisions of law enforcement that might exist within our county, and it's got to be a bunch, right?
I mean, there
we have
are,
the
yes.
Highway Department, we have you, there's Sandpoint City Police.
Yes.
And there must be many more. There's Border Patrol, I suppose. Who am I missing?
There is, yeah. There's Fish and Game,
yes.
The U.S. Border Patrol. We have great partners, and what's so unique about our rural area is we all depend on each other. So when we go out to a call and we need each other's assistance, we don't look at the badges and the patches. We just look that we're police officers. I mean, a good example is in Blanchard when our 2 deputies were shot. We had every agency from Washington and the local agencies in our county responding to that. And it's a great example of the collaboration that we have and the commitment that we have to the safety and security of the county, and we have great partners.
Good to hear it. Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned that you'd like more staff, and I'm thinking of all the areas of law enforcement that are available, and then I'm thinking of your hiring process. Is it difficult to get employees? Are they shopping around with the...
It is. That's part of, that's probably one of our biggest struggles is hiring qualified candidates and getting them trained. I think that one of the biggest liabilities as a manager is negligent hiring. When you hire somebody that shouldn't be on the job, it gets you into lawsuits, that they do things that they shouldn't be doing. And so our standards are so high that unfortunately, during that vetting process and the background process, we unfortunately disqualify a lot of candidates that really look good at first view, but we just can't afford to hire somebody who is not really qualified for the job.
One has to be so careful.
They do, and yeah. What are one of our biggest problems is difficulties is the pay. They make so much money, police officers in Post Falls, Coeur d'Alene, and Spokane, which is just our neighboring. Sometimes, I mean, it's $10 to $15 more an hour starting out, and it's really hard to compete with those kind of salaries. So we have to provide incentives, and one of them is being able to work here in Bonner County, but then also cost of living here is higher than Coeur d'Alene and even Spokane. So that's a kind of a difficult situation to overcome, but we're doing it.
Big challenge.
I think there's a service that a lot of people are aware of and a lot of people aren't, the Nixle Alert Service.
Yes.
Tell our listeners about that.
So Nixle is a free service that we provide. And so when you can go to our website, bonnerso.org, and there's a little button at the bottom, it's Nixle. And you can sign up, and the sheriff's office, through dispatch, will sign out alerts. We'll send out alerts anytime there's a road closure, we're looking for somebody, there's a danger, there's information that's really pertinent and you may need in your neighborhood. If we're on a call and we need to close down and have people to close their windows and be on the lookout for somebody that we may be in pursuit of, we're send out a Nixle. And we have a great program at dispatch. We can actually send out emails and text messages to anybody who has a cell phone to the whole county or sections of the county, and it will go out and send that information on, be on the lookout for this person, or we need your help.
Is this like the Amber Alert system, sort of, or different?
It's similar to the Amber Alert, but you actually make a decision if you want to sign up. So you can sign up. Your information is never captured. It's never shared. We will send it. You can sign up with your email, with your cell phone, and we can send that out as a mass email. And it's really beneficial. And we actually encourage that. We have a lot of folks that live in Spokane and Coeur d'Alene who come and take advantage of the ski resort and our recreation, where they sign up because they know they're traveling from different parts of the county. And they get a Nixle. There's an accident on a long bridge and it'll be a delay. The road's closed. So it's good that you can stop and have lunch and maybe reroute.
Yeah. Yes. So think about it really broad scale, not just for an abducted person, but anytime there's a traffic disruption on 95 that might impact when someone comes or goes to from Sandpoint, the Ski Hill, Coeur d'Alene, this can tell you when the roads are likely to be jammed up or clear.
Correct.
It's very useful. Sheriff Wheeler, can you tell us how to get signed up for that again? Because I'm going to do it as soon
Good.
As I get off
You
air.
Can go to bonnerso.org.
Okay.
And on the homepage, there's a button that says Nixle. Click on that, and you can fill out the information and do it immediately.
Nixle, Nixle.
Yes.
Yep. All right. Yeah. Phil, that would help me be on time for the radio program, I would think.
or know how long it's going to take you to get somewhere afterwards.
Boy, had I only known this 3 years ago.
So we're running a little short on time. Are there any things we haven't covered, Sheriff Wheeler, that you'd like to put out there for the public?
Well, I just say that we have a great organization. We have made incredible strides over the last 10 years with training. One of the things that I'm very proud of is that crisis intervention training, a training to deal with those in mental crisis, has been on the forefront and have been a priority for me. And we've had 10 different academies, and we have trained every officer, every deputy in the sheriff's office, both in patrol and in the jail. And I know that every officer in Sandpoint has been trained through this training. And I think pretty much most of the other agencies. And it's really, I think, been a great tool and has minimized the arrest and allowing us to be able to deal those with mental crisis and be able to take those to the drop-off center in Coeur d'Alene to get help. And I think that has actually made Bonner County safer because of that.
Mm-hmm. So important to have a uniform training standard and a high training standard, which leads me to a question from a listener, and I hope this is one that will be easily answered. But this person called in before this program and said, you know, in this time when we've got citizens carrying firearms, and they are, and wanting to help, and sometimes jumping in an emergency situation. There was a recent national situation where someone was aiding the police but was then accidentally shot. They were wondering, does our county have a protocol to make sure that they're as safe as they can be when citizens are, you know, stepping in as they probably shouldn't be, right?
Well, I could tell you that, you know, I kind of look back, and I've been here 20 years, and I cannot recall any time where a citizen has been shot or has been mistaken. But we are very, very fortunate because I think we're different from different parts of the country because we have constitutional carry. There are so many people that carry firearms, and we know it. We're cognizant of it. And so part of the training we do is as a group and all together as all of the offices, the police department, our federal partners, we do active training shooting, and we just hosted a training this last summer. And part of that training is recognizing those. And we know that if somebody has a gun, you've got to be pretty
careful
and careful and identifying if that's a suspect or if that is the perpetrator. So I don't see that's a big issue for us.
All about training, I
suppose. Yeah, it's all about training.
Yeah. Any other events we should know about before we let you get back to the important work of being our county sheriff?
No, I can't think of any. I just encourage people to have a safe winter. Remember, the roads are going to start getting really bad. And whenever we have bad roads, we have accidents. So I can encourage you just slow down, enjoy the holiday season, and please don't drink and drive because you will go to jail.
Good advice. Yes. Good advice anytime, but especially during the holiday season.
You bet.
Both those are preponderant. Well, thank you for coming on the show this morning, Sheriff Wheeler.
Thank you, Phil.
Yes, we've enjoyed meeting you and talking with you. Thank you.
We're going to take a short music break here, and then we'll come back with Rich DelCarlo and the Christmas Bird Count. It was 1960 on this day that the Crickets released their number one hit, I Fought the Law.
And the law won.
The Clash covered it in the version that's become a standard, and we're going to listen to that. The Clash. I Fought the Law, and the law won. That usually happens that way, Julie.
Well, it's how it's supposed to be,
yeah.
Phil.
Welcome back to KRFY, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. And if you're just tuning in, the first half of the show, we listened to Sheriff Wheeler talk about Neighborhood Watch, Search and Rescue, other volunteer and outreach programs in the Sheriff's Department.
Yes, that's right. And it's amazing how many volunteer departments there are in the Sheriff's Department. And I didn't realize what an independent body the Sheriff's Department is.
Yep, sure is. And if you are just tuning in, also, this is now December. It's our end-of-year annual membership drive. We depend on support from members like listeners, like you. So if you are a current supporter, now's a good time to re-up your support. If you're not yet a member, now's a great time to become one. Julie, tell us about how to do that.
Oh, it's easy. And if you're already both of those things, if you're a member, you're a renewing member, or you're a new member, you can still give a little extra at the end of the year. We can use it. And you do that by calling 208-265-2992 and leave a message. If no one is in, we'll get back to you. Or go to krfy.org, use the donate button, and we would love to see an additional year-end donation. Hey, we're now moving on to something completely different.
We are birds.
Yes.
So we have Rich DelCarlo. For those who are regular morning show listeners for the Tuesday morning show, Rich needs no introduction.
No, he doesn't.
For those who are tuning in for the first time, let's talk a little bit about Rich and his background. Good morning, Rich.
Good morning, guys. Good to be back.
Good to see you.
Yeah, thanks. So tell us, Rich, a little bit about yourself. And you're a man of multi-talents. Sometimes we have you talking on about trees, and we'll touch a little bit on that today. But today is about birds. Tell us about your bird background.
Well, you know, I was thinking about that And I think that it's just basically, you know, I've always been interested in birds and their uniqueness and their beauty and their just kind of amazing features. And so through the years, that has just continued to grow. And every time I go out, it's just a new experience. And it's one of the most exciting things is just the level of awareness that has given me in my life. Just so when you go outside, there's just another level there that is available to you.
So where did you learn about birds? How did you come to be a birder?
It's always been an interest, and then I have kind of a science-oriented mind, inquisitive, and so that's kind of how I got into birding. And then I've also participated in the science end of it in actual studies, and then that's how I kind of took on the Christmas bird count.
Mm-hmm. And we're about to get to the Christmas bird count, but part of why you have an increased awareness of birds is that you're up among the birds quite a bit, aren't you?
Yes. Yeah. And there's definitely a relationship, obviously, between trees and birds and, well, trees and everything, basically. So, yeah.
And so, again, for the first-time listeners, Rich is an arborist, and tell us a little bit about that.
I am an arborist. My business is Peregrine Tree and Landscape, and I've been an underwriter here for a number of years.
And we appreciate you. Thank you.
You're welcome, and I appreciate it, too. And I kind of have a unique perspective when I can visit with clients, and I see things that sometimes others don't, and I can point that out and say, you know, maybe we can wait to do this when this particular bird is done nesting or whatever.
Yeah, there's aside from the observational opportunities that being up in the trees provides, there's a real close interrelationship between the trees on a property and the birds that are there.
Yeah, it's always so cool to be up there and just have a nuthatch or a chickadee come just so close, and it's really really fun.
And it's nice to be able to, as you say, save or work toward a win-win sort of solution for folks with trees that need work and birds that need a place to live.
Absolutely, and people are really once I told them that, or they're appreciative that I pointed that out to them, and they go, oh yeah, let's wait. So.
So you're doing the Christmas bird count, and that's a program that the Audubon Society has been engaged with for, I was going to say, a century or more.
It is a century or more. It started, this is the 119th Christmas bird count coming up. And it was started in the turn of the century, 1900, actually, in a reaction to the feather trade, millinery hats, that whole thing. And then plus, there was a tradition on Christmas that there was a competition to go out and just your team, there's team A and team B, and whoever shoots the most birds
wins.
On Christmas Day, wins.
Oh, yeah. And it's so a bad people Christmas started, for kind birds.
Of, people are, were kind of, became aware that bird populations were decreasing and said, Let's change this around. And Audubon has been involved with that for 119 years. There's literally tens of thousands of participants around, mostly North and Central South America. There's over 2,000 counts, 1,700 or so in the United States. So it has grown, and it has become a really valuable tool in kind of assessing things.
Yeah, it sounds today like a much more effective way than shooting birds. But many of the early naturalists who studied birds, Audubon and Sibley and others, shot them to be able to look at them better.
Sometimes I feel like shooting flycatchers because they're so hard to identify. So hard to identify. That's the only way you can find them out.
I've got to think Teddy Roosevelt must have had something to do with this because in his youth he collected birds.
Yes. And of course, that was a big thing that, you know, all naturalists did basically. They had they prided themselves on their collection in the drawers, you know.
Yeah.
Right. Well, Rich, we'll remind you of this another time or two, but what is this year's date for our local Christmas bird count?
Yes. It is December 22nd. So in a couple weeks, it'll be a Saturday. We will meet at 5th Avenue Restaurant at 6:30 a.m. or so. We'll meet, kind of have something to eat, chat a bit, and set up groups. There's four groups. The count is the count circle basically is centered in Sandpoint, and is a 15-mile radius around. And there's four different groups, and everybody is invited, are welcome. I do need competent birders, and at least one in each group, so we have some
a reasonable identification.
Yeah. I mean,
but there's room for a novice to come.
Absolutely,
along.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's my understanding that the radius is the same from year to year, but the date isn't always the same.
That's true. The Christmas bird count has a window of December 14th to January 3rd, I believe, or 4th. And we usually try and do it a little earlier just because, you know, things start getting like winter, freezing up. There's more, you know, chance for more snow. We're doing it later this year, but I think it's going to be okay.
So how do you decide what day to do it?
It is. How do you decide?
Yeah.
Well, some of it is based on counts that are going on regionally. There's a count in Coeur d'Alene on the 15th and a count in Bonner's Ferry on the 28th, I believe. So we kind of coordinate with that.
So you're trying to spread them out a little so that people
just
can participate
so you
more
can
than
get
one?
People potentially from other counts that come. We try and do it on the weekend just to help facilitate, mm-hmm. you know, people that are working. And
you're looking for you're counting the variety of species. Are you trying to get an estimate of a population? If there's a raft of coots out on the lake, are you going to take a rough stab at how many that might be?
Yeah, it's a rough stab.
Yeah.
Because they're just, I mean, there are, you know, there are estimating methods, but when you get big groups of birds like that, it is an estimation. Mm-hmm. But still, you'll be able to tell, you know, if it's 300 or 8,000.
Yeah. And even on a more micro scale, if you're deploying people to four different places, at least in the county,
yes.
you're looking for presence, absence, say, of eagles or ospreys, or I guess ospreys are gone, but eagles at each of them versus at just one of them.
Yes, right, exactly. So we're looking for total species and then numbers. So the more people that we have out there counting chickadees or ducks or whatever, you know, the better we will get a little better estimation. And and obviously it's not a you know, what it does is provides trends over the years, because we, even though like you said, the count circle is the same, and basically we run it, we do the same route pretty much every year. So there is some consistency in the viewing and the numbers that we get.
Yeah, the way that you're counting or looking for species, so that, you know, even though we know we won't count every bird, at least get an idea of what's going on with birds in general.
Right.
So can you tell us where they go to count, or is that a top secret on a
need-to-know
basis?
It's basically the everywhere, and that within that circle. I mean, the objective would be to cover every square mile, every foot, whatever, you know, that's the ultimate objective. But we're pretty much limited to roads. We look for bird feeders. In fact, if people that are listening have bird feeders and would like to participate and don't want to go out, they can just get a hold of me and actually they can submit their bird feeder sightings, and that becomes part of the count.
I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. That's nice.
And so how does someone get a hold of you?
Well, two ways. My phone number is 208-290-1405, and my email is rich@peregrinetree.com. And if you have listened to the radio, then Jim Healy's voice is echoing in your head and knows how to spell Peregrine.
All right.
Yeah, so, in this day and age of Google, we can figure out spelling.
That's right.
Thanks to Google, I'm a better speller.
It's so true.
But so I'm intrigued still. You're sending out four groups, and they're going to make multiple stops at multiple locations as they move along based on what they think they might hope to find, or weather conditions, visibility,
yes,
those kinds of things.
Yeah. Basically, you know, there's voids now in the avian ecology where there just aren't birds. And so right now you've got birds that are pretty much grouped up, little groups of birds like chickadees and nuthatches and kinglets together. And it's almost like what happens in the tropics, where you have groups of birds moving along, tending ant swarms and stuff, where you just have this big group. And so that's kind of what's happening now, where food and survival is the main thing. And so obviously that's why feeders are good. But if you're out in the woods, sometimes you'd be out there forever and not even hear a chickadee. And then all of a sudden the chickadees will start and other birds will be around also. And they do that because just for security, safety in numbers, and food.
Well, there's voids. There's also hot spots.
Absolutely.
Without giving anything away, Denton Slough is a fabulous place to...
Well, I'm not trying to, keep these these birding spots secret.
It's good.
Yeah, it's good.
But the point is that in the winter they're not everywhere because the weather is inhospitable, and so
it's all about food.
Yes, right. Mm-hmm. So the bird counters need to
We look for are places where there's brushy areas and fruit, either berry trees, like in Sandpoint. You know, there's lots of mountain ash right now, and hedgerows and things like that, places near water, especially if there's open water.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it's going to be an interesting day for anyone who volunteers. I imagine everyone needs to dress warmly, bring snacks, etc. It's an entire day?
It is an entire day. We'll meet at 6:30 a.m. and go until basically dark, which is like 3 o'clock.
Well, it'd be a longer day in a more southern clime.
Yeah,
it'll be, and actually that'll be just right after the solstice, so that will be a short day.
And full disclosure, I have attended this Christmas bird count event, and I've got to tell everyone it's a fun day because there's an opportunity to learn new birds, see birds we haven't seen, and see quantities of birds that you might not otherwise see.
We've done it before, Deb and I, but these days she likes the backyard portion of the Christmas bird count, the feeder.
Mm. Well, we'll have to ask Deb to call in with the bird count.
Yeah. So we will, like I said, we'll go out and we'll bird all day. People can bring. It would be great if they had them binoculars, mm-hmm, or even a spotting scope. You want to bring your own food and water, beverage, whatever. There are some chances to stop here and there, restroom kind of thing.
Really, but warm clothes.
And warm clothes, yeah, because while there will be a lot of just kind of roadside birding, we will get out. People are encouraged to get out and kind of walk around a little bit and to explore some areas.
Do you get back together at the end of the day and compare field notes?
Yes, we do. And that's a really fun part. We usually haven't quite determined where yet, but sometimes we we'll just gather for a beer and someplace. And we are looking for, chickadees and nuthatches and all the common birds and waterfowl, but there's one thing that is kind of the fun part is trying to see something different, something unique. And that's kind of where the competition comes sure. in, and where, you know, this, it, and that's where it becomes fun. In the
who's the, got the eyes to spot
in the afternoon, one. Where, you know, when we go down the list and you get the.
So, if someone wants to participate, should they call you in advance, email you
yes.
in advance?
Yes.
And
please.
Your contact information one more time then?
Phone number 208-290-1405. Email rich@peregrinetree.com.
Very good. And we are going to come to a close with the second interview, but just a last question about the bird count. Rich, do the birds seem to be stabilizing, reducing in numbers? Are there some bright spots, or, you know, tell us how the birds are doing in general?
I think in general that bird numbers are going down.
Yes.
We used to see thousands and thousands of red-necked ducks on the lake, and now you don't see that many. There's a lot of coots. In the fall, we get a lot of widgeon, but I think that numbers are down. Mm-hmm. One thing that is increasing, and it's kind of an amazing march across the country and world, really, is the Eurasian collared dove has really expanded. We used to not even see it. Now there's places where we see 50.
Yeah, I've seen them in town.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So there's, you know, but that's kind of where the value of this comes in. They're able to, you know, see. And you know, right now we don't, there's no, I don't know if it's because of the weather or what, but there's no waxwings around or birds that come here in the winter that from the northern
climates. Well, it sounds like the topic for a whole nother show we'll have this winter about the absence, presence of birds that once were, and what we might predict for the seasons. But
so everybody, come on out on December 22nd. Right.
Well, thank you for joining us this morning, Rich.
We always fun. Thank you.
Always enjoy, especially the annual Christmas Bird Count Show.
December 22nd, so folks should put it on their calendar.
So we're going to take a short music break here, and then come back with a few minutes of community calendar events. It was 1965 that the birds went to number one with their second hit. Do you remember what that song was, Rich?
I don't.
Their second number one hit was Turn, Turn, Turn.